first slide. Yes, great. What I'd like to do with you tonight is share my experiences in India and break it up into... I'm hearing some echo. Is this okay? Shall I move it down a bit? All right. Share with you some of the things that I got to experience in India, what life is like for me there, some of the challenges that helped me to grow, stretched me, and some of the spiritual lessons that I've really that I've taken on board, some things that I've learned. So we'll start with what India is like, what I've been doing where I'm living. Oh, hang on, switch this on. Wonderful when it works, isn't it? There you go. Well, that's working. That's good. Nothing. Well, I know the laser's working, which is... Oh, here we go. Whoa, what slide are we on now? It's just catching up. Oh, maybe that's needed. Gives me a chance to drink some water. Perfect. Thank you very much. At the back, technician. Okay, so I'll start with, there's going to be a lot of pictures of places that I got to visit while I was in India. The thing about India, it's this huge country. Geography is very different, depends on where you go. It's got the deserts, it's got jungles, beaches, and all these things. And I wouldn't have had the opportunity to visit these places unless other staff members had said, hey, do you want to come with us? We're booking a train, we need to do it 100 days in advance. We're going to be going to this beach on our break. And so I'm like, yeah, sure, let's do that. So someone else is organizing it, then it's perfect. I just get on the train, follow the crowd, and I get to see all these amazing places. Towards the end of my stay in India, another two of my companions, colleagues of mine from the school, and I decided we would take a series of train trips and try and make our way all the way to the north of India. Again, a wonderful opportunity to see everything that God has made in this country. The various languages that you're encountering, the different foods, and so just like a real immersion of what India is actually like and not just boarding school life. So in Ooty, right here, you can see some tea plantations on the left, and that's what they grow a lot in Ooty. They have a chocolate factory, I don't know where they get the chocolate from, and a tea factory, and so you can take tours through the bushes and see the people that cultivate the tea there. And this other picture on the right is something that I got to see as we're going up north on the train. There's some very arid lands between Tamil Nadu, which is in the south, and the north where Delhi is. Some very dry lands. I got to count two camels, which I thought was exciting, but whatever. Maybe people have seen camels in zoos before. These ones are being used by people. Again, as I was saying, on the top here we can see beaches, wonderful beaches, white sand. Maybe you've seen some of these adverts. I don't think it had sunk in that some of these brochures for holiday destinations are actually found in India, like Goa, real big place, and some other places, Barkalam, Cochin. So I got to go to one of these beaches with some other staff and just had a really great break, because that is really needed while you're at a boarding school to re-energize, enjoy some food that's not boarding school food, and then go back to school ready to hit the ground again. You can also get beaches like the one on the bottom with rocks. Very hot, you gotta protect yourself, wear lots of sunscreen. And then on the right, you can see a picture which is way up in the mountains. This is not in Ooty, this is now finally where we got to, it's like the beginning of the Himalayas. Again, they've got some wonderful natural lakes. This place is called Nainital, and they think there's nine lakes in this area. And they have cleaner lakes than we have down in the south. All the sewage is collected and it ends up in lakes usually untreated, which is a real shame. But at least these lakes are doing and looking a lot better than the ones down south. Some more pictures of beaches, mountains, wonderful places. And just a real eye-opener to how diverse India is and what a wonderful opportunity that God's given me to experience this country with other people and talk about the wonderful things we saw then. Some friends that I went with. On the top right, you can see Alex. He's an accountant, actually, but he came to help with teaching piano. He would do one-on-one lessons. He was really good. and also classes for the standard 7, grade 7 students and grade 8 students. He would teach the music lessons because there are many needs at a boarding school. Whoever is willing, they're going to find something for you to do. And Alex had been at Hebron School before, and he came to join. On the bottom left, you can see, again, Alex is in the middle. I'm on the right with a blue t-shirt, and on the left is another friend, Victor. He's originally from southern India, and he actually hasn't done any traveling to northern India just for fun. He'd done traveling before with Scripture Union, visiting schools, but this is his first opportunity to actually just enjoy hikes and going to beaches and things like that. So it was very different for him, and he wasn't much use in translating for us because they speak mostly Hindi at the top, but in the south they speak Malayalam, Tamil, and all these other languages that are completely different. So we're relying on him, but it's not being much help with translation. At least we're all in the same boat. We can all identify with each other. On the bottom right is a picture of some dense woods. Again, on this hike that we went to, we had opportunity to go with some friends that were giving us a tour. They knew the routes and the mountains, and they took us to this place, and they were thinking, is it worth taking you this pace? Because, I mean, it's going to be beautiful, but the only risk is leeches. There's a lot of moisture in the grass, and so you just be careful. You guys got something you that will cover your legs from the leeches? Well, my friend Victor had open sandals, so he's like, ah, this is not a good idea. Well, whatever, it doesn't look that bad, so let's just give it a go. So we did. We hiked through this wonderful-looking forest, and I took the pictures because it does really look marvelous. But then you've got to be checking your feet every 10 steps to see if these hungry leeches are crawling up your legs, which they would. And then with a stick, you just brush them off before they get there. So I think we escaped that one, but it was a wonderful hike. Also, something else about India is the architecture. As you know, I was working here in Windsor as an engineer, civil engineer, and buildings were my thing. I really enjoyed that, looking at the designs of buildings and the structural integrity of them. But just the architecture in India is amazing. And this thing's got years behind it and history. Each building has a story behind it. And you learn about those things if you have a tour guide. I guess the Alex, my friend, he's well-read. He's read lots of books about the history of India and buildings and things like that. So he was like our tour guide. And Victor knew a lot about the culture and how to do things and how to get auto rides really cheap and say, no, no, that's ridiculous. We're not paying that. We're going to go over here and get a different price. So he was good at that as well. And we got to go into all these buildings. For the Taj Mahal, we foreigners have to pay something like 1,000 rupees, which is like 10, maybe $12. Not a big fee. But in comparison, local Indians pay 40 rupees. So that's like 40 cents. So it's quite a difference. But whatever. Yeah, they can pick on us foreigners. I guess we can afford it. This is an entrance to the Taj Mahal. It's got three of these on either side. Usually people only see that building, but it's got gates and a walled enclosure, so no one can actually go into the Taj Mahal unless you paid the entrance. You're just like, oh, I don't want to go inside, that's fine, I just want to take a picture. Well, you can't, because there's these high walls, you can't see anything of the Taj Mahal unless you actually paid to go inside. So it was worth it. This here at the top left is a train station. Again, you see the minarets and turrets, just caught my eye like that, and some big fields of grass in front of a fort. This is another big fort in Delhi. We're walking around there, lots of history. Really interesting to see how different emperors and different maharajas had made improvements and what they wanted to establish so that they would be known. And I don't remember any of them, so nice try. But I remember the castle, and that's something that I stood. Food. Okay, so we've seen all the beautiful sceneries. We've looked at buildings that are different. And now we're looking at food. Now, this isn't typical Indian food, but at a boarding school like Hebron, you have students coming from all sorts of countries, including Korea. This is a Korean dish. And so you'll have Korean dorm parents, or you'll have Australian dorm parents, or whatever. And they will have dishes for their kids, for the students on weekends. This was for music performance after we'd worked really hard in concert band, me playing the trombone in an orchestra. They rewarded us with this amazing deal. So we got to enjoy that food. We enjoy British roast beef meals sometimes at school, so don't feel too bad for me. We have, this is Indian food. They have all these little dishes. White is safe. It's kind of like, it cools your mouth, so go for that. It's curd. And anything red, you'd be warned, it could be very spicy. I was surprised because it's not the first time I've been in India. With Becky, we'd traveled before, but I think my taste buds are now adjusting to the spice. Don't test me on it, but at least I feel that eating this dish is okay for me. No problem. It includes even dessert right here. Very, very, very sweet. One of my favorite dishes, I'm going to miss this if I leave India, it's called idli. I don't know how to describe it. They're little white flying saucer discs. It's kind of like a ricey consistency, but it has no rice in it. It's kind of like a chickpea base, and then you put some gravy on it, which is cold gravy, and that's also like a chickpea base, sesame something or other, and you dip it, and it tastes really good. Yeah. So we have that for breakfast, or for dinner, or for lunch. You can have it any time of the day. That's a mango lassi on the top. I was working with the A-level boys, and their dorm parents were Indian people, and so we get lots of dishes that were Indian. This was for Color Week. We have different themes throughout the week, and so this week we had all our food into little compartments of color. The importance of the different nutrients that are found in food that has different colors in it. You wouldn't have thought about it. What is high in iron? What has lots of calcium? What has lots of fats, which are okay? For special, we would have omelets being cooked right there on the spot, and you can pick what you want. They've employed lots of cooks and staff to help with the kitchen, so that's something special that they do as well sometimes. Or you could go to the market and buy your own food and cook it on your own stove. Being the person that I am, I just thought it was very convenient to eat all the meals at the school, and I'm not picky. They all taste wonderful, so I'll just eat there. But towards the last week of school, when things were getting very stressful and busy and I was marking exams and, you know, you have to get everything ready before you fly out, I said, well, you know what, I'm going to have breakfast in my own flat to save time. It didn't save time. I still had to wash the dishes and I had to prepare things. So, whatever. If you feel like you want to cook your own thing, you can put it in the side and buy your own ingredients. But I like the boarding school food. No problem. You see different ways that they cook the food. This here is a big open pit oven and a tandoori oven. You can have meat that gets cooked in tandoori ovens, or you can have your bread that gets cooked there. You see them make the dough right from scratch, a little bit like a pizza, waving it around, and then all of a sudden gets flung in the side in this oven. And then he reaches down into the hot oven, flips it around, and sticks it on there. It's just amazing to watch. If I took videos, it would take a lot of memory, so I just stuck to taking pictures. But seeing how they do this is really cool. Okay, so we've looked at what it's like just living in this country, a fascinating country of India. But although I'd love to have been able to go on all these trips to explore India, I had a commitment to teach mathematics, which I'm also very passionate about. So what is it like to teach maths at a boarding school? There's lots of similarities of teaching in any country. I'll just kind of go over a few of the things and responsibilities. This here is our sports hall with decked out all these rows of desks for exams. We use the British curriculum, and they sit down for their A-level exams in rows and rows, and you get 2 months of exams blocked out, and you try and figure out when your next exam is. So unfortunately, the sports hall is out of use, but just recently they built an exterior covered shelter where you can also play sports, so that's great. Now they've got some place to play, and there's a big, twice a year, monsoon season, which means there's a lot of rain, but a covered outdoors place provides extra places where you can play. I'm sitting in the one of three, I think, computer staff rooms doing preparation for my next lessons, I guess. Usually staying up quite late with a coffee to keep me there. And at the top, you get Parents Week, and you're talking to the parents. It's a very special time because these kids haven't really been able to visit home. They have to go home at least twice a year. But other than that, their parents are far, far away, and sometimes their parents can't make the visit. So they could visit twice a year. Sometimes they won't. Sometimes the kids have to travel there to go and see their parents for the summer break, or they'll be told to go and stay with some other friends because the parents are too far away or they can't afford it or something like that. So when the parents do come, it's a very special time. And just talking to the parents about how their children are doing in math, you realize there's a bigger story here. These parents are contributing to work on mission fields or in businesses and talking to colleagues. And I'm contributing to that work by taking care of their children and teaching them and training them. Not only that, but they're going to have a future as well. And they might follow in the footsteps of their parents and be bold and adventurous and have a life of serving God or working at a boarding school as well. So it makes me put things in perspective when I'm talking to these parents just across this little desk and watching all the crowds around. The love these parents have for the work that we as teachers are doing makes you feel so supportive. I don't know, in England it was definitely not like that. You felt all the teachers were, what are you doing for my kid kind of thing. But here they're just thanking you for all the work that you're doing, and we're partnering in this together. So it wasn't just looking at grades, it's discussing their children and how we've been taking care of them. Okay, so in England I did do some teaching of maths, but I didn't teach the top bright higher students in standards 12 and 13. So this is the first time where I was going to sit down to do that, and they had big need to cover all these modules, they're called. And looking through the textbooks, I'm like, oh boy, this looks really complicated. I can't remember how we do this. Start having a little panic moment. I love maths, but what if you don't know how to solve that problem and you have to teach it the next day? So I had to quickly review a lot of the questions, get myself prepared. Very humbling experience. You can talk to your head of department and say, this is a topic I'm going to find hard. And you can get some help that way before. At the bottom right corner is a picture of my flat, part of my flat, about half of my flat. This is where I can cook, eat, and entertain some of the boys when we have a Bible study. And when I need it, I just cover the whole place with exams to mark, and then I can go assembly line style, quickly marking questions, and still be up till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and then hopefully I'm ready for my lessons next day. So quite intense, but I enjoy it. I love, it's like puzzles for me. Do you want to see the next puzzle? Yes, I want to see the next puzzle. So it doesn't bother me. I love it. Okay, here's a verse in Philippians. I could look it up in the Bible, but I don't want to run out of time. So I'll read it from the screen. It says, I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. Now, let me say right here that actually, for me, living at a boarding school and in India is not a hardship. It is really comfortable for me. I find that I just fit in there. It's like a fish swimming in the water right there. So I'm not talking to you and saying, oh, please pray for me, it's really difficult. It's not. I actually find it really, really fun. There's lots of things you can do with the students. Started a board game club. That's something I missed from here in Windsor with the boys. We just play board games. You start board games there, and they love it too. And I'm like, oh, great, I've got this too now. Or you can go on cycle rides and take a look around. They love doing the exercise as well. They love getting out of school. But what is it like when we have to experience some of these things, being well-fed or hungry? Have we learned the same secret that Paul is talking about here in Philippians? No matter what situation God's placed you in, are you at peace that God is going to provide you with what you need for that day, and he's going to help you get by? Okay, so here's a friendly visitor coming to pay a visit when I'm doing a math lesson. There's a little monkey. We get quite a lot of those. They're about as common as squirrels are here. So you just have to be, and they hang out in packs. Monkeys love hanging out in packs. So we've got security guards to make sure that these monkeys aren't chasing after the kids or throwing stones or just letting the kids know to beware. There's lots and lots and lots of monkeys. Go this way, please. So they're there. This was just taking a look while I was teaching. And it's just normal. So you just close the windows and you carry on with your lesson. It's quite interesting. But I had to take my camera out and tell the kids, just wait a minute, I need to take a picture. On the right side, that's the dining hall. The school has 350 students and a lot of staff. I think something like 200, including people that work in offices and kitchen and stuff like that. So we can't feed them all in there, so they've got bells to kind of break it up. We do it in shifts, and then you clean up, and then you bring in the next bunch, and they sit down. We've got this dining hall here, and then we've got a staff dining hall, just for staff, no students allowed. And then we've got a junior school dining hall. So there's three dining halls, and it's amazing to see how fast they serve and clean and eat the food. And then on the left is just my flat. It's got a little kitchen, so I've got something there for boarding school. What else? Okay, the picture on the top is a picture of three mobiles that I had to confiscate. Part of my job, one of my responsibilities, is to go around making sure the boys have got their lights out. They're quiet and they're either at their desks with a little lamp on revising or making notes, but no computer games, no electronic devices. They've got to be in their beds at 11 o'clock. So it can get quite late sometimes. And so some of them are still pushing the boundaries, and you have to confiscate them and say, I'll give these to the ICT department, the computer department, and they will discuss with you what they're going to do with it and when you can have that back. On the bottom right is me playing cricket. That's the national sport in India. They love it. They keep stats. But just listening to them speak about cricket is just way over my head. So I'm getting used to it, getting into the groove and figuring out how to play the game. But there's lots about it that I don't know. And on the left bottom corner, we've got blue gold house competitions for swimming gala. They've got all the events, front stroke, back stroke, butterfly, all those things. And they try and compete and get points for their houses. And at the end of the year, they add up the points, and whoever gets the most points gets the trophy, and there's a picture taken, and yeah, it's great. It gets put on the newsletter, and the parents are proud that the house won. I'm on gold house, and this year we did not win. So maybe next year I'll come back with a better story. But it's a lot of fun, all these little competitions, and boarding school life is full of all these activities and sports and clubs and things like that. So it's very hard to be bored, but it is still easy and to find students that are homesick. So I find the easiest thing to do is just kind of point them in any direction where they might have an interest and get their minds distracted. Boys, a little bit easier, I think, than girls to distract and get them integrated. Just a little chat, and then they're ready to go. But yeah, you can still get some that are homesick, especially the younger ones. But the school does a really good job of having all these activities and staff running it after school and just being involved. What else? Yeah, an opportunity for me to continue developing my skills in music. I'm still trying to sight read music when I'm playing trombone. Playing guitar is a different story. All the chords are written down there, so it's nice and easy, but trombone is still a challenge. And I have the opportunity there to develop the skills. One of the conductors has lent me his trombone, so I get to play that and practice that. Songwriting and music writing, I can work a little bit on that. Then on the bottom, you can see that we're preparing for a big graduation event with the songs and things that we practiced. They are very talented musicians. And what's amazing to see is that more than half of the school has music lessons. They are involved with some kind of music, some kind of instrument. I don't think you can say that about normal schools, that half the students are involved in music and they're pursuing it to a really high academic level. We have needed to call in teachers from the area who can teach university level piano, because some of those kids are just, they're like prodigies, you know, they're really good. And here I am as a teacher sitting in the row with the other trombone players trying to figure out the notes. It's fun. Okay, what's one of the challenges I faced? There are a lot of people in India. A lot of people. What was it? We were visiting Niagara Falls just recently when we came here, and there was quite a crowd walking up and down. And they're like, so is it busy? I'm like, this is kind of normal in India. This is the crowds you're going to be experiencing. In fact, the traffic would be held up and taxis would be trying to swerve around. So it looks really busy, as you can see. This is just a park. Do you want to have a picnic and have lots of people looking at you because you look different? Then, yep, go. Welcome to the Botanical Gardens just next to the school. Or up here, this is a race, getting ready for a race that was put on by the schools to promote in the environment. And this is just a normal market. This is no special event. This is just the crowds of the people that you're going to be rubbing shoulders with. So lots and lots of people. And I don't get charged up by being with people. I need my downtime to be charged up, and then I can be with people and have a good time. And then I need to retreat again and have some quiet time by myself and then get... And the boarding school has provided me with a flat by myself where I can recharge. That's good. So I've got that met, but it is one of the challenges. In 1 Corinthians, if all were a single member, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts, yet one body. I'm reminded, just by looking at all the crowds, and in particular staff, we're going to look at some pictures, the staff and the students, everyone's got some gift. Although it looks like you're lost in a sea of faces, for God, that's not the case. He knows everybody by name. Everyone's got a particular plan, and he's looking out for each one of us. Again, you can see loads and loads of people. This is between the border of India and Pakistan. There's a flag ceremony, flag lowering ceremony it is, and it's like a parade. The armies of both sides come out and chant, a bit like a football game, you know, just cheering up the crowds. They go crazy. They're very patriotic for their country. At the time, it was Ramadan, and there are more Muslims and the Pakistani side, so there was less support from that side, so it felt like India had the bigger voice with some of the Hindus. But it's just, the passion there for their country and what they love. You can see here a mess of houses, a mess of roads, a mess of traffic, cables running everywhere. But that's normal, that's life, you get used to it. You learn to live in those conditions, and it might be a challenge at times, but I've just grown used to it now. Traffic and floods, these are the three-wheel little taxis that can squeeze around everywhere. Transportation is very cheap for Western mindset. Trains are very cheap, taxis are very cheap. $19 for a three-hour taxi ride from the airport to Uti school, that's nothing. Or if you take the bus, the big public bus, that's 50 cents, 60 cents. So that encourages a lot of travel in my mind. Come and travel with me. But yeah, there is a lot of traffic, and I don't know how they make it so that no one gets hurt. No, there's no major collisions. It just kind of sometimes gets to a gridlock, and then you're trying to figure out how they're going to move around. The lines there are just suggestions, but you can go and swerve however you want. You can park on the other side. You can cross right through the middle of a speedway. No problem. Make up your rules. On the left, this was during April 1st, April Fool's. I was making my way to the classroom, and I noticed that they had covered the floor with these little cups filled with water, so I knew there was going to be a big mess. But if you're in the right mindset and you know it's April Fool's, you can have fun with them. If you're going to get annoyed and express that, they're going to get fun out of it, and you're just going to be miserable. So you've got to join them and have fun with them and be like, yeah, that was great, let me take a picture. Okay, who's going to help clean up with me now? Sure, we get some boys that would help me. So it's learning to live in this community with people who like pranking, people who seem difficult sometimes, students. It can be difficult at times at 11 o'clock and you're trying to get some work done or trying to go to sleep, whatever. This is a staff. We took an afternoon after school to just go down to the village. It's just an easy walk and have an ice cream. It's hard to organize these events, but when they happen, you really feel, oh, good. It's not just me in a classroom. It's not just me running a board games club. We're in this together, and I get to see your faces, and we get to hear each other's stories. And that's really important as well to building community relationships. On the bottom right, you see staff putting on shows. They'll practice pieces of music that they've written themselves or that they're going to perform. Some drama shows. As staff, we had 3 weeks of practicing, getting ready for a drama, which we presented to the students. I was blown away by how amazing it was, all the work that had gone in, directing and writing down the lines. People who, on top of teaching, on top of their boarding school duties, are putting in an extra to make it special for these students, to make it special for the kids. I love being part of a community like that. Health challenge, okay. Yeah, so it's quite easy if you're working under such conditions for prolonged periods of time and going to bed late to get sick. Thankfully, I think God is really protecting me, and I want to thank you all for praying right now on Tuesday nights or whenever you're praying for me. I know those prayers have been very valuable because I've only gotten sick once, and it wasn't for very long, and medicine was marvelous, and it helped me, but I know it was because I'd let people know, and they were praying for me. And reading this verse here in Judges 6:14, the Lord turned to him and said, "Go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you?" If this was something God was telling to one of his servants, I can apply that as well, because I want to serve God, and God can say the similar words to me. Go in the strength that you've got, in the health that you've got, and serve. I'm going to do things through you. And that gives me peace, that gives me assurance that I am supposed to be where he wants me to be and that he's going to get something done. Doesn't matter getting sick, doesn't matter working late. You recover from these things. On the left, a quick story there. Again, it was traveling with my three friends. We went into this restaurant. It looked very typical Indian, so we're like, yes, that's good. And we got to see them. The meat looked fresh. They were preparing it right there. They put it on skewers, and they were cooking it right from scratch. We're like, looks safe to me. We'll sit down and enjoy the meal. We got to see everything that the cooks were doing to prepare it. We sat down and enjoyed it. But after taking like maybe 10 bites of the tandoori chicken, I told my Indian friend, "Do you mind just smelling mine? Is it just me?" And he smelled the chicken. He's like, "Oh, this smells awful. And now that you mention it, I wasn't going to say it, but yeah, now I think it is off."
And we're like, oh great, we've just had like 15 pieces of this, and we've got long train rides ahead of us. Oh, what are we gonna do? So we called the person who'd served us the chicken, and we say, can you just smell it? Is this normal? Is this some spice or something? And we smelled it. You talked to some other people, and they came back and they said, we're not gonna charge you for the chicken. Well, thanks. Do you want to order something else on the menu? I think we're going to have enough, thank you very much. So we walk out of there and we're like, oh, we're going to have to prep. What should we have? My friends are going crazy. Let's have some strong mint, whatever, you know, just something to kind of calm down the stomach or something, undo what that chicken had done to us. None of us got sick. Again, another miracle. But I know that chicken was off. There's two monsoon seasons a year. It just rains and rains and rains and rains, and you're hoping the next day you can get out and not have to wear your jacket, but you do, which is why they built covered walkways connecting the classrooms and the library, and so you just walk in those walkways that are covered. But it's, it's a risk. We have to, as teachers, be alert. You know, are these students running out in the rain? Are the boys playing football because you can't stop them? And are they being, you know, messing about? It can get quite cold, too. We live up in the mountains, so it rains and it's cold, and if they're not careful, which is a little building in school which has little beds for people that get sick, is gonna flood, and you can't have all these boys and girls that are sick there. So we have to be alert, and that's easy for that to happen. I don't know if you can see, it's like a river down here. Well, this is flooded in water, and the rain is just pouring off the roof. Another challenge, okay, I'll start with a verse though. It says, don't be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God. What are some of the challenges of living abroad? I guess what you miss is being in the same time zone as your family to communicate with them, or with my girlfriend, or with friends to hang out and have the fun times that you remember from Windsor. So those are some challenges, but the thing that I was learning here is that there's always something positive you can look out for. Those distances make it so that we write things down and we can look at what we've written to each other in emails or on Facebook or whatever and just review how God has been faithful to us. And you've got it there in writing. It's not just something you remember having talked about. You've got something to go back to. And you value your family a lot more. You come finally across all these miles, you come back and you love hanging out with them and being face to face. So there it's 12:20, June 17, which means I can now finally open this envelope that had arrived two weeks beforehand for my birthday, and that makes it exciting as well. So yes, we live far apart, but just the looking forward to opening letters and things. Thank you to some of you who've sent those. They'd be very meaningful to me. You can have fun in these little wheels. There's like a hamster cage blown up, and you roll out into the water, and you run around and fall down. Great fun. And this is a three-tiered bed. You've got one bed here, another bed here, and then the other one is kind of on this side here. And it comes with a toilet in the aisle, which everyone shares, and people walking up and down every half an hour, selling chai and Indian snacks and food and stuff like that. And I'm saying every half an hour because that includes past midnight as well. They'll still come up and down selling it at the top of their lungs. It takes some getting used to, which is why I invested in some earplugs. But my other friends, they found that challenging, and I just enjoyed watching their reactions, seeing them get worked up, and would swap stories as to how we slept. There was always one baby in the carriage. I don't know how that works out. Babies crying at night, not so much fun. Okay, one of the lessons that I learned. Compassion. This is a place we visited again, traveling with my other two friends. Jariwala Bay, I think it's called, or Bach, or something like that. And at this place here, the British had control. They had lots of soldiers. But they felt that the people were plotting against them and trying to have a revolt. So the general in command at the time said, we're going to squash this right from the start. We're going to give them a lesson that they won't forget. They're not going to mess with us. They're not going to cut our telegram cables or our telephone wires, and they're not going to burn our trains. They're going to respect us. They're going to fear us. So what did they do? They went into this place. It was like an enclosure, a park. There's only one narrow entrance. It's not a door. You just walk through the entrance and you get there, but the whole thing is enclosed in walls. There's grass, people having picnics and things like that, all of them Indian. And then he brought his soldiers and lined them up, and without any warning, he said, fire. And the firing just kept going nonstop for about 15 minutes. I don't know how many thousands of people died that day. And some of them died because they threw themselves down wells to try and survive. Some of them died because they got trampled on and stampeded on. And what you see is just a picture, a mural, to remind people of what had happened. So very, very awful. So where's the compassion fit into this? You see on the sides people that are heroes in the eyes of the Indians, people that came back later to drag the wounded or the dying, knowing that their lives are at risk. Maybe the soldiers are still there, and anyone trying to help someone who they just shot is probably going to get shot as well. People that had come back to save other lives, other people's lives. Didn't matter what caste you came from or what your religion was. You're in need. This was awful. We're going to help you. And instead of making everyone be like, okay, don't mess around with the British, things started rolling and became even more. You know, it's, in India, that went out really quick and it unified them. They were all in one purpose. And so anyways, it worked against them in the end. But the lesson that I learned here was the compassion. People who could protect their own lives are now putting their lives in danger. What for? To try and see if there's anyone that they could help and rescue who is dying. You see lots of animals in India, that's for sure. Cows are sacred for the Hindus, and so they're allowed to go wherever they want. Except you can see that this rule is a bit hard for shopkeepers that have their produce and the cows are coming towards them, so they kind of stand in the way or kind of push the cow, the sacred cow, off to one side. So traffic's got to be careful for those. The other thing I was noticing is that there's many animals that are just not taken good care of. They're not clean. Wounds are open. There's no vets or no money to send these animals to the vet. So horses covered in flies, very malnourished. It's really sad to see. But what I'm noticing is, though the first thing I'm noticing is the animal, I know that behind this animal is the person who owns the animal. Isn't that they don't care about the animal? Isn't this animal like a sacred cow, maybe like a sacred goat? Or, you know, just care for your animal. Why don't you? Well, the reason they can't care for the animal is because at home, they've got a worse condition. What, you think we've got money to send it to the vet? Do you think we can clean it with the dirty water that we've got? Or spend the time getting contagious diseases ourselves? And you start to think it's not an easy problem to solve. I'm only seeing a little part of the picture here, this poor animal, but there's a worse story behind this poor animal. What's happening at home? What's happening to the people? These little kids who are half-dressed, don't have full clothes on, just left to fend for themselves. Or at train stations, when you see a group of young girls who are all decked up and dressed up, you're suspicious. You know that they're there to try and sell themselves to get some money to survive for the day. So animals, although we love them a lot in the West, they take a low priority there because you're trying to survive. You're trying to make the most of what you've got. How do they show compassion when there's no compassion for each other? Unless, as Christians, we can show that there is a difference. We want to make a difference. We met parents who were vets who would take these animals and just help them as best they could for free. We saw people who were working in orphanages, people were setting up schools to take care and give these children something to aim for, something that they can hope for. Here's some goats walking the road. Generosity. That's another lesson. Romans 13:8. Let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another, for whoever loves others has fulfilled the law. This view is taken from a hotel, which we would never have been able to afford, except that my friend, the Indian friend, had connections, and these connections had shown great appreciation for the work that Scripture Union had done, and that's the link. He'd worked with Scripture Union before. So they emailed or messaged him back saying, yeah, sure, we've got a place for you, we'll set it up, no problem. Well, we arrive at this hotel, which is in the middle of kind of the most expensive part of town, in high tourist season, which is when we're planning to travel. And not only do we get an amazing view, but this is like the big suites with the bathrooms, and everything was arranged for. I'm like, oh, we can't afford this. Don't worry, it's a gift from us to you. We would like you to stay here with us. It's an honor. And you're like, wow, thanks for arranging that, for making sure that we have a place to stay. We don't mind sleeping on couches. We're fine doing that. No, don't talk to us like that. We want to give this so that you know that we love you. We care about the work that you're doing. So you see that they're being very generous, and all over these places where we would meet up with other friends or victors or whoever it was, we see them being so generous in having us over and feeding us and sharing meals. Again, you can see another picture on the left. Some more people that I met with Victor. On the right, this is at the boarding school again. These are the dorm parents that we worked with for the older students, the grade 12s and 13s. This is Sam Sundaram, Indian, and he's the one who helps with a lot of the cooking for Indian food for the boys. And this is John Sisson. He's now left for this year. He's gone back to England. And this is Liz. She works in the girls' dorm, which is 2 miles from the main campus. And each of these, it's so easy to see how they show generosity and how they put so much time and invest into the students that they work with. A real wake-up call for me was when we went to this place in Amritsar. It's their holy site, covered in gold on the outside, and many, many, many visitors are coming, but this is like a pilgrimage site for, I don't know what the religion is. It's not Hindu or Muslim. I can't remember what it is, but for them, it's a sacred pilgrimage site. And the people that are running this place and the imams that are reading the sacred scriptures or whatever, they make this their lifestyle. This is a place where they're going to come and volunteer their time at day after day. And what do? Part of it is feeding. At no cost, the food will be cooked, it will be served, dishes will be picked up, and they will be stacked and washed and cleaned. And then the next people come in and they get sat down and their food is served. I think it's 10,000 people that get fed every day, and you don't pay anything for the food. Anyone who's poor in the area could just come in. There's that water, the holy water, where you could have a holy bath, I guess, and keep clean. And there's people you could talk to. You could have all these meals for free. And I'm like, wow, that's a real reality check. How is this being done by Christians? How can we show a greater love than what these people are doing for their fellow man? That's our challenge. And this is now in Ireland, so it's not India. A bit more recently, just having been there for a wedding with Becky, my sister, and Steve, her husband. We were met up in Ireland for a wedding. But also in Ireland is where my head of department of maths lives. This is Louise. She's now moved to Ireland permanently, and she's going to be looking for a job there, which means there's now a new head of department, and I've been shown a lot as to how things run, so you can pray for me that would go smoothly, the transition. But she is the first person I would think of from the school who shows selflessness. It's not just about being generous, but it's about putting someone else's needs above your own. It's easy to be generous if you've got plenty and it doesn't cost you anything to give them something. But she's one person who will sacrifice her own needs to meet other people's needs. She wants to make it special for them. She, after school, is running math help sessions, and we have this rotation, but she just comes anyways to see if there's any questions. She shows such dedication and love for her students. I mean, we never got chased around this much at Maranatha to make sure that we were doing well in school. No knocks on the door and saying, do you have your books? Are you ready? Any questions? Let me see what your revision is. Here's a timetable I printed for you. Here's some past paper. Here's some mark schemes. Let me know if you've got any questions. I'm like, wow, that's amazing. She's someone who I would like to aspire to in this area of selflessness, putting these students' needs above my own. In Philippians 2, 3 to 4, we see the challenge. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. Again, when I landed in Ireland, she said, just stay with my parents. I won't be there to greet you and show you around, but I do have one day when I'll be there and I can show you around the North Coast. You don't have to do that. I'll find friends. I'll make my way into Belfast, no problem. No, I want to show you these places. So that was really special. Just quickly reviewing and we close here. What are some of the highlights? Well, of living in India, there's a verse that talks about becoming all things. It's a challenge for me, but also very easy. Living in a different culture, seeing the different scenery, I find that quite easy. Maths, working as for the Lord, there might be some things that I find very challenging, but with God's help, we can do it, and I'm doing it. Why? Because I'm serving God, and I'm serving the people that are students and the parents. highlights of living at a boarding school, being content in any and every situation, whether there be some of the ups and some of the downs. When you're in the down, you've got staff and people that are going to, you know, support you and give you hope. And in the ups with the students, you just have great times. What have been some of the biggest challenges? Living in community with so many people, but noticing that everyone has a part, that we all form one body. Health, reminding ourselves that if God is sending us, there's nothing that can stop us, that he's got a plan for us. Even though we sometimes get sick, it's a reminder that, wow, he also enables our bodies to heal, and he also gives us the strength that we need while we're sick to do the things that he wants us to do. Living abroad, a reminder not to be anxious about anything, but see the positive in the things that God has put you in, and seeing how it all works together for good, giving thanks for those things, and challenges that I've experienced spiritually to grow in, compassion, being reminded that God is love. He shows great love for us. Generosity, being challenged even by people who aren't Christians, how do we show generosity to others? And selflessness, again, the picture of my head of department who shows such care and extra time in working for these students. They're verses that I've tried sharing with you, and I hope that's what you take from here. I know pictures help to kind of create an image in our minds that we take with us, but knowing that God's heart is behind these things, knowing how God wants to send us out, wants to make an impact in the community that we're in, with the people we're surrounded with, for great good, gives us great comfort and great peace. Let's just close in a time of prayer. Dear Father, I thank you for the opportunity to share with these dear ones what life has been like for the past year, some of the adventures and the challenges that I've experienced. And thank you that in your word we see that there's something for each day, for any and every situation. You can help us to grow in the areas that we're weak in and the challenges that we find hard. We know that you will give us the strength. And as it says in Philippians, to not be anxious, but to give thanks to you for the things that we can acknowledge from your hands. Thank you for the health and strength you've given us tonight to be here together, for the sense of fellowship that we can have, sense of community, being reminded that each of us has an important part to play in this body of yours, the church. Pray that you would help us to go out from here, making the most of every opportunity you give us to impact souls for your kingdom. This I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.